Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Pot Strickland. I'm your host, Shwini Poo, and this is episode 397. This is a live pod that we're doing. So a very special edition for a special second round matchup, that the Knicks have against the Indiana Pacers. I am joined by my co-host Stacy, that is at StacyPatton89 on Twitter. Stacy, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Had a good productive weekend.
Oh yeah,
no Knicks games to distract me. So,
I can't say that I had a productive weekend. I did. I mean, if you're measuring productivity by the amount of times I watched the second half of Game 6 against Philly, then I had a very productive weekend. Aside from that, not very productive. But we are here to discuss and preview the Knicks' second round series matchup against the Indiana Pacers, which tips off tonight at Madison Square Garden, 7:30 p.m. But before we do that, do make a few announcements. First being that Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at Strickland on Instagram. We are posting all kinds of new content on there. Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel, leave us a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. The Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.thestrick.land. This link that'll take you to the merchandise store, and you can find all kinds of cool stuff on there. We just dropped a new line of Nova York merch, which is very, very good. So definitely recommend checking that out. Strickland also has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pot Strickland podcast that I host every Friday at the Prez. You also get access to Takes from Obvious Bozos, our newest podcast that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter. And you get access to the Strickland Discord with the conversation never stops. There are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strickland All, my solo podcast, Rant and Rave about the Knicks even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matt and Myrna, one of the best in the business. And now you get access to Strickland NFL, which, you guessed it, is our NFL podcast that is hosted by Constantine Metricos. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and a $100 tier that's come with a variety of additional benefits of listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours. Truly, one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not, unless it be possible without you. And that must be possible without BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today. Here's more ways to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, so the Knicks, they will be playing the Indiana Pacers, who actually lost the season series to 2-1. Not sure that there's much to take away from that for a variety of reasons, which we'll discuss. The Pacers defeated the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round of the playoffs. They won that series in six games like the Knicks. I personally was not too impressed about their performance, or by their performance, I should say, against a very depleted Milwaukee Bucks team that, quite frankly, they should have been handling that in five, maybe even four games. I don't know. Just so that people have an idea, though, of what we're dealing with. Indiana is second in offensive rating right now in the playoffs at 119.4. I believe they're also second in the regular season in offensive rating. They are also 12th in defensive rating at 116.8. The Knicks are actually 13th in defensive rating among playoff teams at 116.9. They did also play a much better team than Philadelphia than Milwaukee. Offensively, the Knicks are 6th in offensive rating at 116.7. So, I don't know. I guess where do you how do you feel about this matchup? On the surface, at least, are you? Because I think the Knicks will win in 6 games. I feel like I just think that there's a toll that first round series against the Sixers will have taken out of the team. You know, both physically and also emotionally. Like, it was the swings in that series, as we experienced, were so extreme. I think it's really hard to just immediately bounce back from that. And yes, I know that they had 3 days off in between, but I still think there's, I think there's something there. But yeah, I think the Knicks will win in 6 games. But I don't know. What are you thinking about the series as we just kind of look at it from the start?
Yeah, I have to say I'm pretty optimistic. I will say last year before they played the Heat, I predicted, ironically or coincidentally enough, that was also a Heat team that beat a Milwaukee team that was missing Giannis for most of the series. And I was feeling pretty confident, like the Knicks had somewhat dodged a bullet. And I said Heat in 5, or sorry, I said Knicks in 5. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. But I think this is a good matchup. I know that the Pacers had success against the Knicks, but they didn't face them with OG. That Halliburton has struggled with some injuries. Now I think there's back spasms. It looks like he's playing and obviously played well enough for them to win their first round series. But in terms of, I think the physical toll is a great point. Losing Bogdanovich, I think, is a bigger deal than I think we have seen so far. But I think, if we stick to a 7-man rotation, that's going to take its toll. I think the emotional, the fact that it was a very heavy emotional series, I think is a good point that you brought up. And I'd worry about it for almost any other team except this one, because they bounced back each time, right? That game 5 was a gut punch to lose that. Game 3, with Mitch getting hurt and really the way that Philadelphia had so much success in that third quarter, they bounced back. They bounced back from losing, from blowing a 22-point lead in game 6. So I'm less worried about that part, but I think the fact that Indy is not a good defensive rebounding team does not bode well for them. The fact that they can go 5 out is not ideal for us. The transition defense against Philly was iffy. That'll have to improve, and there's things Indiana can do to attack. But in the half court, I really trust the Knicks a lot more than I trust Indiana. And the last thing you have to think about is the lack of experience. The Knicks have been here. This is a veteran group. This is the first playoff experience. I mean, Siakam obviously is experienced, but Halliburton hasn't been this far. Nembhard, there's some really talented players. But I think a lot of that is in favor of the Knicks. I'll say conservatively Knicks in 6, but I would be less shocked by a sweep by the Knicks than I would be by Indiana winning in any number of games. That may be a hot take that doesn't age well, but that is, I do think the Knicks are pretty clearly the better team.
Yeah, I think the Knicks are definitely the better team. I think, what are they? They're 24-5, I think, with OG Anunoby and Jalen Brunson healthy. So that's huge. And one of those games was that ridiculous game 5 that they lost, which I still can't believe that happened.
You can say on the flip side, game 2 was also ridiculous, right?
And no, that was perfect. That was that's fine. So we don't do that here. No, like I just think that there's obviously a strong sample now that this group with OG healthy is elite. He's a major difference maker for the Knicks. And I mentioned that the Knicks lost that the season series to the Pacers 2-1. They actually OG did not play them. I don't know if he played. I think he probably played them with the Raptors, but he didn't play them when he was on the Knicks. The day they made the OG trade, that night they played Indiana. Obviously, he wasn't in uniform for that. And then
and they were just depleted overall, right? Because they didn't
have, I mean, they didn't have RJ, obviously. They traded RJ and Quickly and, you know, whatever. I think Mitch was out at that point also. So just a very different team. And then the next two times they played, the first one, I think, was the second game after Randall and OG were ruled out injured. Obviously, we know OG missed a bunch of time. And then
Brunson out for one of those two?
No, Brunson played. Brunson played. He played all of them. And then the other time, the Knicks again, it was again after or while OG and Randall were both injured. So, you know, we didn't even really get a chance to see how Tibbs would deploy him and all that type of stuff. But, you know, we know that he's a huge difference maker for this team. And the Knicks will need that because whatever you want to say about the Pacers, and I do think the Knicks are, I mean, not a thing. The Knicks are a better team. They're a better team than the Pacers. But Indiana can score the basketball. They've consistently been able to score against anybody and everybody this season. And, you know, I know that there's been a lot of talk from national people about how Tyrese Haliburton's performances fell off after his injury. But, like, even amidst that, their offense has churned along because their offense is more than just Tyrese Haliburton. Pascal Siakam, obviously, is a piece they added before the trade deadline this year, and he's been awesome for them in the playoffs.
They've also withstood the loss of Mathurin, right? That's a pretty big
piece. Mathurin.
Traded field, obviously, so.
Right. Mathurin's out for the season. And Miles Turner has been really, really good for them this year. I think him and Tyrese Haliburton probably have they're the most assist. They're like the two guys that have, I guess, connected the most in terms of assisting each other. But like, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to be prepared for that, you know, because Indiana plays five out. And I know that to some degree, Philly plays five out with Embiid, but I think there's a different element to how they go about that versus Indiana. So that'll be interesting to see how the Knicks handle that. You know, I guess we have to start with this because I just think it matters. While Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Haliburton are very unlikely to be defending each other, I do think this is basically the series. Like whichever one of these guys plays at a higher level, I think gives their team a massive advantage. And honestly, as well as Tyrese Haliburton started this season, his last however many months has not been particularly good relative to, you know, the standard he was playing at earlier in the season. Whereas Jalen Brunson, you know, we obviously have seen it. He's been incredible, right? He's been amazing. He is the reason the Knicks finished as a two seed, got 50 wins, all that type of thing, all of that. He is the engine. We saw what happened in the first round where, yeah, he sucked the first two games. And then after that, he went absolutely supernova. I think Haliburton, as much as I love to shit on him, I do think he's a good player, but I'd be shocked if Brunson doesn't win this matchup pretty decisively. I think he's a superior scorer and just better suited to kind of the general way playoff series and postseason basketball in general is kind of officiated and plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I think half-court offense is again, Tyrese Haliburton is one of the best transition players in the NBA. Even, you know, even if it's not a pure transition possession, the smallest little person in pre-rotation or maybe is just a little bit off, he will expose that. And he's very dangerous. And he has a pretty good step-back jumper. But the Knicks have different guys to throw at him. I would imagine they start DiVincenzo on him. You know, but I imagine Hart will see some time. I would imagine OG will see some time, although you'd probably have him on Siakam, but maybe when Siakam goes to the bench. I think they have a lot of options there. I think I'm very curious to see how much they can limit that transition game just with the threat of offensive rebounding, right? Because they're going to crash the glass and does Indy devote more bodies. I think on the flip side, I don't really know that the Pacers have a lot of good options to defend Brunson. I said this in the strict court. The guy that actually worries me the most is probably TJ McConnell, just because he's always been kind of a thorn in our side, very pesky defender. I mean,
he killed Deuce this year. Like, Deuce had no chance against him in the regular season, all in the three matchups.
Yeah, and I think with kind of how hard he fights to put some more miles on Brunson, I imagine he'll see time in that matchup. He's also just a good player, by the way. Like, I know, like, he's always, it always seems like, how are we losing to that guy? He's lasted for a while, and he's an impact guy. So, but beyond that, you know, I know a lot of people have talked about Aaron Nesmith, but, you know, the Sixers kind of, the Oubre is bigger than Nesmith with a 7-foot wingspan. I thought he did actually a pretty good job, at least until the end, when those last two fouls. I thought Oubre did a pretty good job defensively on Brunson. So I don't think Nesmith is anything Brunson hasn't seen. Obviously, last year he had Jimmy Butler on him. He had Isaac Okoro on him. I don't really, there hasn't been something that he hasn't been able to figure out. I think the Pacers perimeter defenders might be a little bit underrated. I don't think Nembhard is that great a defender, but he's pretty solid. And he
are we sure they're under, like, they were not good on defense this year? And
as a unit, yeah. But in terms of just guys just getting torched, Nembhard, I thought, did a pretty good job on Brunson during the regular season when he had those opportunities. Obviously, we didn't have OG, we didn't have help. So it's different, but overall, it's very difficult for me to say there's anything systemic that the Pacers can do to stop Brunson besides them just missing shots. Whereas on the flip side, I think there's a lot of things. If the Knicks can limit the transition game, I think that makes Halliburton a lot less dangerous. If they force him into kind of a lot of step backs, if they make him be a scorer, which is obviously a lot easier said than done, but they've managed that the last couple of times they played Jokic even. The last time he went off in terms of assists, but the two times before that, the Knicks blew them out, once without Hartenstein or Robinson. So they've figured out, you know, I think they, and Jokic had 30 and 10, but he also had a lot of turnovers. And I think those are things that we've seen from the Knicks. They've been able to adapt to, you know, this is a very unique player. They've been able to adapt to those kind of players and make them score in the half court. And I think they just have a lot more answers, even with the depth issues, than the Pacers do for Brunson, period. I really don't think that they're going to be able to contain him much at all unless he has a bad shooting game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at the point where I just expect Brunson to figure it out regardless of who we play. And when you're playing a team that, quite frankly, is just not good defensively, that's a problem for them, obviously not for the Knicks. I don't know what the hell Jay Williams was smoking this morning, but apparently he thinks Aaron Nesmith is going to be some huge
problem. He said some wild shit, dude, recently.
Yeah, that guy. Apparently Aaron Nesmith's going to be a huge problem for him. I don't really see it. These are the numbers, and this is Legion of Knicks. He posted this. The actual numbers themselves, you can probably find them. You can find them on NBA.com/stats. Brunson fucking torched Aaron Nesmith this year. He was 12 of 18 when guarded by Nesmith. So that's 66.7% from the field. He scored 29 points on 18 shots. It's pretty good. The team, I believe there's 44 possessions here that were tracked on which Nesmith defended Brunson. The team scored 60 points on those possessions. So again, like these are small samples you're working with, but we've seen what Brunson has done all season. And I'm sorry, like, he is torched and tormented way better defenders than Aaron fucking Nesmith. So I'm not really worried about that. And I agree with you. I don't think there's much that Indiana can do to slow him down. I mean, there will be things they throw at him, which he will have to adjust to as the series goes on. We saw that, you know, against Philly. And honestly, I will say, I thought, like, Brunson's a monster. I thought Philly did a really good job of mixing up coverages and throwing stuff at him to kind of keep him guessing pretty consistently, just that he's just so good that he can make those adjustments very quick. And he obviously did. You know, you mentioned the pace. You know, what's the saying? Styles make fights. The Knicks are the absolute slowest paced team in the league this season. They, in the playoffs, they're actually dead last in pace. They're playing even slower in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. Indiana, they actually slowed it quite a bit down They were slowed quite a bit down by Milwaukee in that series. They're only ninth in pace in the playoffs at 92.89.
Were they the fastest the regular season?
They were. Let me just check real quick. I think they were first or second. They were second. First was the just the wonderful Washington Wizards. But yeah, Indiana was second. They're at 102, their pace. The Knicks, just so people have the numbers, in the regular season, the Knicks were at 95.96 per NBA.com. So they've slowed down way more, even in relative to that. And Indiana has also slowed down, which is kind of the nature of the playoffs. I will say, while they scored very efficiently against Milwaukee in the first round, the Knicks are just a way better defensive team than Milwaukee is. Especially considering Milwaukee didn't have Giannis. So that part of it to me, is, I just think the Knicks have a decided advantage there, in terms of what they can do, as you mentioned, defensively. But the pace is going to be key, because we have seen that the Knicks, you know, I thought at times in this in the series against Philly that they struggled in transition. And, you know, that's something that they obviously have to be cognizant of against a team like Indiana, who wants to get out and run, right? They want to. That's like, you know, that's their whole thing. And I will say this also, the Knicks did not do a good job on the defensive glass against Philly. They actually were, they're 13th of 16 playoff teams in defensive rebound percentage right now. They had a 68.4 defensive rebound percentage. They've also been pretty bad at defensive rebounding since the All-Star break, which probably has to do with, you know, they didn't have OG for a while. They also didn't have, obviously, a Randall at all. Hartenstein was on a minutes limit. They had a lot of, Mitch obviously missed a ton of time, but they have to clean that up, because you can't give a team as good as Indiana and that shoots as well as Indiana opportunities. You can't give them multiple opportunities. They have to clean that up. They have to be disciplined. And they've just got to lock in there, because if they can win the possession battle, which I think everybody's assuming they will win the possession battle, and I think they will win the possession battle, but they've got to lock in on the defensive glass, because they were not locked in against Philly. I will say Philly obviously has Joel Embiid, who is a different type of player that you have to be aware of.
They can get two to the ball very easily, right? Halliburton is a little different in that sense, where you know, he's not as sudden as Maxey, but when Maxey was getting in, obviously you have to go help, right, with a rim protector that opens up the glass, right? They were in rotation a lot, which is always going to hurt. So if they can avoid that, I think, I mean, obviously, to your point, the fundamentals on defensive rebounding will always be there, but I think that was a pretty big factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they have to, like you mentioned, like Maxey, the kind of burst he has to get into the paint, draws defenders, and he forces rotations, and that opens up offensive rebound opportunities, like you just said. So, you know, will the Pacers be able to kind of force that, those rotations to open those opportunities up the same way that the Knicks kind of conceded against Philly? I don't know. I tend to agree with you that I don't think it'll be as prevalent. But for what it's worth, you know, Indiana, and I know Milwaukee is what they are, but Indiana, they were seventh. They're seventh right now in offensive rebound percentage through the playoffs so far. That's a 30.3. They're at 30.3 offensive rebound percentage. The Knicks are obviously, I mean, they're absolutely destroying everybody. They're 37. They have 37 offensive rebound percentage. That is number one through the playoffs so far. So, you know, the Knicks are going to get extra opportunities. It is about limiting the opportunities that Indiana has. And if they can do that, they'll be in a very good position. And you know, look, another thing to watch out for is Dante did not have a particularly good series overall, although the moments he did have against Philadelphia were awesome. I just think in general, this should be a matchup that he is better in. Indiana is not as good defensively. they're going to be very, very keyed in on Brunson. And given the fact that they're already operating with weaker defenders than Philly had, and they don't have the length Philly had, right? Like, whatever I think about Oubre or Batum and these, and even Tobias Harris, their ability to rear view contest Brunson, as well as the fact that Joel Embiid is just like, you know, a massively positive impact player. And just even though he's couldn't move, you could see the impact he had defensively.
Miles Turner, Maxey has, I think, 6'7", 6'8" wingspan as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I know Miles Turner's has been a very, very good rim protector for a number of years. I don't think he's close to Embiid defensively. And, you know, the perimeter guys, they just don't have the length to really bother Brunson in the same way. So I think they're going to show a lot of bodies at him. And guys like Dante, Deuce, OG, Josh Hart. Yeah, they're going to have to make them pay. I mean, that can be attacking closeouts off the dribble, getting to the rim, or obviously just shooting threes. So the Knicks are going to have good looks. They're probably going to have a lot of open looks throughout this series. It's about guys cashing those in. And I thought they did a pretty good job against the Sixers in the first round. But, you know, that's something that you just have to continue doing. You got to, I know it's very breaking news here. You have to continue to hit shots in the playoffs. It's actually very important. So we'll see how they manage that. For what it's worth, again, in the playoffs, the Knicks, I'm not sure why this is not tracked. Okay, they don't have the numbers for the Knicks for some reason in the playoffs for catch and shoot. So I'll try to figure that out. But yeah, I mean, I guess we've talked a lot about Brunson, and I don't think they're going to be able to slow down Brunson. How do you see them? How do you see the Knicks handling Tyrese Haliburton? And I know Benji pointed this out in season, you know, that the Knicks really struggled to corral him. How do you, like, I mean, first of all, who do you think is going to be defending him? Do you think Dante gets the call as he did in game six against Maxey, or do you think they try OG again like they did for the first three games of that Philly series?
So before I go to that, which I will, I'll address that. I do think it's going to be Dante, a short answer. I do want to say I'm curious. I'm not sure that you're going to see as much doubling and trapping and help on drives from Indy. They actually had the lowest defensive three-point attempt rate in the league. This is something that people have talked about, but this has been a team that has been willing to allow twos and paint forays, but they do not want guys kicking out to open shooters. Do they change that if Hart's on the floor, that kind of thing, the way other teams have? I don't know. But philosophically, that's kind of, they're kind of the inverse of the Knicks in that sense, where they're willing to live with twos at the rim. They have a really good rim protector. Well, I'm not with Embiid on one leg. I think that that OG dunk, right? I don't know if that happens if Embiid's healthy, right? So I am curious to see. I wonder if Indy actually doesn't double or swarm Brunson as much and is willing to live with some of those drives and mid-range shots more than other teams, just from the philosophical standpoint. And obviously, Carlisle's going to adjust if Brunson is just cooking them. Getting back to your question, I do think Dante will start on Haliburton. Haliburton has a little more size than Maxey, but Dante's performance on Maxey was terrific at the end. Hart struggled in that matchup. OG struggled in that matchup. With a guard like that, Dante is probably your best bet to keep him in front of you. And that's really the main thing with Haliburton. You want to keep him out of the paint. The guy's going to hit some threes, but you really don't want him playmaking and taking out to all those dangerous shooters. So I expect them to do that. I expect them to help on drives. I think they're going to be aware that there are so many good shooters, but I don't expect the Knicks to change their identity. And their identity is helping on drives. They are going to double off of shooters. It's different when it's Tobias Harris versus you know, any of these guys. I mean, Siakam is the only guy who isn't a super dangerous shooter, but even he can knock it down. They're going to help on pick and rolls. The big is going to help, which is going to give Turner opportunities. I don't think you'll see that change, but in terms of the individual matchup, I would imagine we see a lot of Dante. You'll see Brunson at times. And then, of course, you have Deuce. And I do think that if Dante is struggling again, this is a series where I'd like to see Deuce McBride a lot, especially with how Haliburton has kind of struggled after the injury, having to deal with that guy who has the quickness to stay with him, has the length to contest, is a really smart defender, and is good off ball, I imagine Deuce is going to play a pretty key role in this series as well.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Indiana did not shoot particularly well against the Bucks. You know, they, as it's, by the way, I have the numbers now. The Knicks shot 39.4% from three on catch and shoot threes in the first round of the playoffs. That is right now number three or third best in the league, for at least in the playoffs. Indiana shot 36.2% from three, which is, I don't know, fucking 10th or something. They don't have the rankings numbered, so I have to actually like count, which I'm not going to do right now because I look like a fucking idiot if I did that. But they're like 10th. You know, I don't know what to make of any of that because the variance is, you know, you're talking about small samples. The variance is significant. I tend to agree with you. Indiana's a good shooting team. They were a good shooting team all year. I don't think you want to bet that they're going to just not be a good shooting team. You should operate kind of on the larger sample, right? So the Knicks need to be cognizant of who they're closing out to, running these guys off the line, doing it in a manner that's disciplined, you know, getting good contests, all that type of stuff that we've seen them do. And look, their defense in the first round, I know Philly is a challenging opponent. They gave up the fourth highest total of catch and shoot threes through the playoffs so far in six games. Philly got 147 in six games. They also shot the highest percentage at 41.5%. So, you know, the Knicks got burned at various points in that series, giving up catch and shoot threes. And I will say this, like, the one of the main frustrations for me throughout that series, and this is something that Indiana will not be able to throw at the Knicks because they just don't have the type of player to warrant this, in my opinion, as good as Siakam is. Like the Knicks were doubling Embiid at various points, but their rotations were not clean. You know, there were multiple times they would double Embiid one pass away off of Tyrese Maxey, and he burned them so many times on those looks in that series. And, you know, you don't want to give up layups like that. You know, you don't want to give up just wide open, easy shots that you're not even really making them work for it. You want to avoid that. And it's very, very important that the Knicks clean up their off-ball rotations. I mean, we saw even in game six, which the Knicks won, they allowed Philly to get back in the game because they were just sloppy in terms of defending a guy like Buddy Hield, right? They just were not locked in. They left him wide open multiple times. And their rotations were all fucked up. So that's something they need to clean up. And that's something that they really, like, again, as the better team in this series, you don't want to concede things easily because that's how you can get upset in a series. And, you know, if they're disciplined about who they double, when they double, you know, what the rotations are, I think they'll be fine. But they were not particularly good and disciplined in a lot of ways throughout that series against Philly. But also worth mentioning, Philly, I think, is just, I mean, they're not, I think they are a better team than Indiana. And with both Embiid and Maxey, I think those guys threaten you in ways that, at least, you know, however you feel about who's better between those two guys and Haliburton and Siakam, the aggregate of Maxey and Embiid certainly, to me, exceeds what the threat that Haliburton and Siakam provide too. And I do think this is worth mentioning. OG, very, very familiar with Pascal Siakam, obviously, right? They played together for years in Toronto. Precious Achiuwa as well. He's a player I think they need to kind of get him some more minutes. You know, we mentioned the depth. They went seven deep for the most part.
Would you play him at the four?
I think this is a matchup where you can use him at the four for a little bit. Sure. Yeah. Like we know what Tibbs is going to do. We know he's going to ride, you know, his top six, seven guys, the maximum amount of minutes he can. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important that you mix in Precious. And if that means using him at the four a little bit, sure. You're not talking about major minutes, right? Even if Precious played like 8 minutes a game, that that gives you something. It buys you a little time. And, you know, I don't think it's realistic to just be like, Josh Hart, play fucking 47 minutes a game. It just, it's asking a lot to sustain that for an entire playoff run, which the Knicks are hoping to make a real run. So I would like to see Precious for sure. But I think the Knicks are well equipped to defend Pascal Siakam in a way that Milwaukee was not. You know, obviously without Giannis, they just, you know, it's Middleton who he has a decided advantage over. And honestly, Middleton is just not what he was defensively. He's just nowhere near the player that he was. But Bobby Portis, Brooke, good defender, just not what he, again, also not what he was defensively previously, and also just doesn't have the quickness to match up on Pascal. OG, obviously very, very different caliber of defender. And look, as well as Pascal played in that series, he averaged 22 points a game. You know, like this was not Joel Embiid going off for 33 a game, whatever the fuck he averaged, or Maxi averaging, whatever he did. As well as Pascal played, he was not that dynamic. So I think the Knicks have an advantage, or not an advantage, but I mean, yes, they have an advantage, but I think the Knicks have really good options to throw at him. And you know, what we were talking about, who would defend Haliburton earlier, I think it'd be a really big mistake to put OG on him. And I thought it was a mistake to put OG on Maxi, which Tibbs adjusted after game three. But to me, you want OG on Pascal. And, you know, maybe at times you're going to have OG on even Miles Turner, right? Because we know that Indiana loves to run that pick and pop with Haliburton or whichever guard, honestly, McConnell even. And
Turner. It worked really well against Embiid, right? In this similar situations. Like when they figured out Embiid isn't going to attack the rim in the same way, you know, OG was very effective on him, contesting those jumpers.
Yeah, yeah. And OG was... And he can obviously switch and all that type of stuff. But OG should, to me, it's pretty obvious that he should be the primary defender on Siakam, at least to start the series. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think he's going to do a good job on Pascal. I think, you know, obviously he's very, very familiar with his game. And, you know, I'm very confident in what he can do in this matchup, but Pascal is good, so they have to be disciplined. I mentioned the Miles Turner thing. Are you worried at all about the pick and pop five out stuff? Because that is something the Knicks did struggle with during the regular season against Indiana, but obviously that's not the same thing as the playoffs. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, five out has been kind of a thorn in the Knicks side for a long time. You know, it's the number one thing beyond just how talent, if they are lucky enough to advance, it is the number one thing I'm probably worried about against Boston, besides, you know, the overall talent, even more so, I think, than Jason Tatum. Turner is a good shooter. You know, the last year he was at 37% from three. This year he's at 36. That is pretty solid for a big. He's taking about four a game, which is not super high, but he can get him off. He's not a fake shooter anymore. I think there's a point in his career where we would have said that. He's capable of making them. He torched Brook Lopez at times. And frankly, I am worried about it because that's the Knicks play. I don't even think their centers are immobile, right? That's the thing. People would say, oh, Mitch can't defend threes. Obviously, he made a couple of stupid decisions against Maxi, but I don't think they are incapable of defending that. I think the bigger issue is that they're going to help aggressively on that pick and roll. They're going to help, you know, aggress. They want them to stay towards the rim. Mitch wants to stay at the rim. Hartenstein too. I thought they adjusted well after Embiid kind of torched them in game three. You know, I don't think he really went off the rest of the series, right? From three. So I think they adjusted well to that. At times, they've been willing to live with a short defender on a switch. You know, they maybe pre-rotate towards Turner in those pick and rolls. You know, if you have Hart off, if you have Dante and Mitch in a pick and roll, and you have Brunson off ball, maybe you pre-rotate Brunson onto Turner.
And it's worth mentioning, even in his, you know, lesser state, Embiid is a way more dangerous threat to capitalize on switches. And bully defenders, smaller defenders, in a way that Turner just is not.
Yeah, and the Knicks were even willing to try that with Brunson, and Embiid made him pay by shooting over But it could be Hart pre-rotating. You know, they have options there. It does worry me, the five out stuff. It also worries me with the bench. And there's, you know, to kind of one other thing I wanted to kind of talk about, you know, so I felt like in the Philly series, they were consistently losing the starters minutes, right? Because Embiid and Maxey are dominant. So I think the formula was that they tried, that you wanted them to follow, was tread water during those minutes at least, or limit the damage. And then the bench, you should be able to win. And it was very close margins, obviously. I think the Knicks finished with a total point differential of +2, but that's how it went. To me, this series actually feels a little bit like the opposite, because the Pacers have a good bench. The Knicks do not have any kind of proven creation beyond Brunson, and he's going to have to sit at some point. Do you see this as a series where, like, now, yeah, they have to win the starters' minutes and tread water with the bench? Because that's, I see it's playing out a little bit more like that.
Yes, I think that. I'm not gonna lie. I think the Pacers' depth. I know there's been people talking about it. I don't get why we think their depth is that good. Like, and honestly, Carlisle basically was playing eight guys by the end of the series, so he shortened.
Well, when Halliburton sits, they have someone. McConnell can run it off.
No, of course. I get your point. Like, I do think there's not going to be the drop off that of, oh my God, this guy is sitting, so now they're terrible now. Like, they don't have that type of drop off that the Sixers have. But, like, you know, you look at the minutes here: Siakam just under 38, Halliburton just over 36, Nesmith 35, Nembhard 35. Turner 33, Toppin, Obi, old friend of ours. He was at 19 minutes. TJ McConnell 18 minutes. Ben Shepherd 18, and that was basically it. Jalen Smith only played twice in that series. He played two games. Isaiah Jackson played four games. I mean, all these other guys—they're all single digits, barely. You know, they're just kind of like getting charity minutes, probably. I don't see that drop off happening for Indiana. So I don't even know if I would call it like, oh, the Knicks have to win the starters minutes versus, you know, I just think like they should have an advantage pretty consistently over the course of 48 minutes. Right. And in a lot of ways, the fact that Tibbs is just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to play Jalen Brunson 44 minutes, whatever. Yes, you run the risk of fatigue and all those type of things, but the fact that he plays his best players so much, it should give them again a consistent advantage over the 48 minutes. So, I will have to see how it plays out, and we will see how it plays out. But like the Knicks bench, you know, Deuce was really good. Mitch was obviously very good. They only scored 3 points combined, or sorry, 5 points combined in game six. Indiana definitely gets more out of their bench. Obi Toppin averaged 12 in the opening series. McConnell was averaging 9.5 and 4.5 assists as well. Ben Shepherd, 6 points. Like, you know, that's about 27 points right there off the bench. The Knicks are not getting that type of point production anyways off their bench. So the burden, to your point, does fall on the Knicks' starters to kind of carry that offensive load. They did it against Philly. They're going to need to do it again because, you know, even though I just spent time talking about how I'm not super impressed by the Pacers' depth, they are deeper right now than the Knicks. And more importantly, they just have more guys that consistently score the basketball. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure if I answered your question, but that's kind of like how I'm thinking about this series where, you know, can the Knicks starters carry us offensively to the level that we need them to, quite frankly, right? And they did against Philly, but they're going to have to keep doing it because Indiana's going to score points. So you're going to have to score, and you're going to have to score consistently to defeat them and put them away.
Yeah, and I think the five out part of it is pretty important. You mentioned Obi, so Obi Toppin. I am curious because the Knicks have you know, we're leaving Tobias Harris open. They were leaving Batum open quite a bit. You know, they are going to help off shooters. Obi is a guy who they saw, you know, last year he took 11 three pointers per 100. shot about 34%. This year he's up to 40%, but on, you know, 6 3-pointers per 100. And he's been playing well. I think it's fat. Like, I would imagine he's going to match up with Hart a little bit when OG goes to the bench. Hart's going to crash, but Obi likes to leak. That's an interesting dynamic. You know, I kind of view Obi a little bit as an X factor in this series, to be honest, because, you know, I think, you know, what you're going to get from the shooters. You know, Haliburton is going to be able to create, you know, Turner can knock down some threes. Obi, though, is a guy who can burn you if you're not, you know, you don't have your cross your I's and dot your T's, cross your T's and dot your I's in transition. And he's a guy that can burn you from outside. He's not a great shooter, but he's pretty reliable and been pretty consistent this year. You know, do you think that's fair to say that he could be an X factor in this series? How are you?
Obi, sure. Like, he's an X factor in the way that any non-star, non-starting player can be an X factor. But Obi's what he is. He's a fine player. I think he's solid, but he's not. He's not a guy that you should be losing sleep over. He's not a guy that you're probably game planning for very much, right? You're not like, oh my God, like, we got to make sure we're fucking locked in on Obi here. I mean, he's a guy that you're probably, I mean, we had somebody in the comments here. I want to say this was from Anthony Impostado. He said, we sagging off Obi the series. And, like, you know, I don't, there's always a difference between sagging off versus, like, you don't want to just give up wide open threes without any pressure being put on the defender. But Obi is definitely somebody that you can feel comfortable maybe cheating off a couple more steps than you would, say, Tyrese Haliburton or Aaron Nesmith or whoever. He's not like this super – I know he shot the ball really well from three this season. For the year, Obi Toppin shot 40% from three on 3.1 attempts per game in just 21 minutes. So pretty solid. For the playoffs, though, he's at 28.1 on 5.3 attempts per game. So what that seems to tell me anyway is that Milwaukee was probably comfortable just daring Obi to beat them. And the Knicks, I think, will probably make the same bet, right? Because to me, you'll live with Obi going off, right? If Obi, like, we saw this last year when we played Miami, right? In game one, when we didn't have Randall, they were like, okay, we will let Obi Toppin take as many threes as he wants.
I think he's actually 11.
Yeah, and we're happy to give that up. We will just live with that. If Obi Toppin beats us, so be it. I would imagine the Knicks will be comfortable making the same type of calculation if the benefit is, hey, we can slow down Pascal, we can slow down Haliburton, we can slow down Miles Turner, pick and pop. Like, those are the things you're primarily worried about, right? Not Obi Toppin. So does that give him the potential to be an X factor? Yeah, of course, because I think the Knicks are going to be willing to dare him to make shots. But I'm not worried about him any more than I am. I mean, to me, that the real X factor, if you want to, you know, however you want to take that, is TJ McConnell. Like, he's been a Knicks killer throughout his career. Again, we talked about this earlier. He gave the Knicks a lot of problems throughout this season, especially Deuce. Like, as good as Deuce is defensively, I don't know what the fuck it was. TJ McConnell, like, owned him this year. So that's something to keep an eye on. But, like, he's a rotation guy. I don't think he's like the X factor for them, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think with McConnell and Deuce, I think why he gave Deuce problems, Deuce is great against super athletic guys, right? We saw what he did to Donovan Mitchell last year in the playoffs. I didn't think he was that great against Maxi, but he's better equipped for those kind of matchups. McConnell has a very, I don't want to say unorthodox, but he's good at changing speeds. And I don't want to use the word crafty because it seems like that just gets applied to every white guard, but he gets to those spots and those floater ranges and he gets off his shot in a way that I think Deuce is just a little more off balance. He doesn't have the experience to handle a guy like that. It'll be fascinating if Haliburton can do some of the same kind of things, because he's also not a guy that relies on just blowing by, you know, and hitting super contested shots, those kind of things. So I think that's a good point to bring up on McConnell. I think that with Obi, I do worry about in transition because the Knicks just weren't that good. I do worry about, you know, him on the offensive glass. The Knicks weren't great on that part either. On the flip side, I think when Obi is on the floor, I'd imagine they attack him as much as possible on offense. If he's guarding OG, we saw how improved OG has been on offense in these playoffs. And Obi, frankly, still has those problems with lateral agility. I would put him in screen and roll if he's ever on the floor with Brunson.
Oh, I think Brunson is going to hunt him. No question about it.
I'm interested to see if similar to what the Sixers did with, pre-rotating and keeping Embiid in the paint, do they try to do something else with Obi, but then you're bringing Miles Turner out, who's not a bad perimeter defender, but, you're taking away your best rim protector at the rim. Obi solid, but he's not, you know, that good. So I think that presents, I mean, there's guys they're going to hunt. I expect them, you know, if they do put Nesmith on noted, I think one, Brunson will be more than comfortable cooking him in ISO, but I expect to see more of those guard screens. Do you anticipate any other specific tactical adjustments that Tibbs would make or the team would make?
You're talking more offensively?
Either side, yeah, offensively or defensively. I think we've talked defense quite a bit, but
I think they're going to hunt Obi, but the guy, I mean, I think that not. I think they're going to hunt Haliburton. They're going to try to make Haliburton work. And if they hide Haliburton on Josh Hart, I fully expect Josh Hart to have a monster rebounding series. Like, I mean, he's going to have a monster rebounding series anyways, right? Because that's what Josh Hart does. Haliburton is just not going to be able to keep him off the glass in any capacity. So that, to me, I mean, that's not really an adjustment, but that's something I imagine they do. I'm also very curious to see if the Knicks stay as aggressive as they were hunting and as aggressive as they've been all season in terms of going after offensive rebounds, or if they dial it back just a little bit because of the threat Indiana poses in transition. But yeah, as far as like any major kind of tactical adjustments I see, I'm very curious to see how they, we talked about this already, but I'm very, very curious to see how they end up defending that Haliburton Miles Turner pick and pop, and who they defend it with, because I think mistakenly at times Tibbs overvalues what Josh Hart can do as an on ball defender, especially in terms of like fighting over screens. Like, it's just hard for him because he's a pretty fucking strong dude, but I think he gets caught up on screens a bit. I want to see how they defend that, because again, and I think I want to say it was Benji that pointed this out during the season, the Knicks really struggled defending that pick and pop at times. And they almost, like, you know, there were times where they just conceded wide open driving lanes to Haliburton because they didn't know how they were going to cover it. So I think they might switch that a healthy dose. I could see them blitzing Haliburton at times. My guess is they will be daring. I think they will be comfortable to some degree in, hey, Miles, you can shoot 15 times a game. You can shoot, you know, we will dare you to take. He took 14 shots a game against Milwaukee in his 33 minutes. I could see the Knicks being comfortable with that. I think they'll live with that. I really suspect that their primary concern will be, we do not want Tyrese Haliburton going off. And everything else, like Haliburton and Siakam, will be the keys for them in this series. That's just my guess. And everybody else will be secondary to that. So if they feel like they can slow those guys down, turn off their water, whatever, I think they'll take that trade-off any day of the week.
Yeah, I think... You know, I think Hart, we can just say this, you know, obviously on the glass, he's really good and is good at getting deflections. I didn't think he had a very good defensive series against Philly. You mentioned some of the rotations being off. I think he was a culprit quite a bit. Dante, I think, was also a culprit at times. I think Dante is probably their best on-ball option in the starting lineup. Where do you think, Do you think they put Brunson on Nembhard or?
Brunson. Yeah, I think Brunson. I think they might put Brunson on Nesmith.
He's not much of a driver, right? I mean, if you're turning him into a driver, you'd probably live with that, right?
Yeah, and I think Nembhard has more craft to his game. He's also more of a ball handler, and I imagine that they don't want Brunson to be defending ball handlers, or they want to at least avoid it as much as they can. So I would guess Nesmith, but who knows? I see Luca in here, Nick's tape. He's talking. I think we have to make Hallie into a scorer. It might not be the best game plan to let Hallie cook because his passing is what gets him into his offensive flows. That's a good point. And you know, if you make Ken Haliburton, like we know Brunson can score 35 a game if that's what the defense is forcing him to do, and lead your team to a victory. Can you make Tyrese Haliburton, like, does he have that in him? Does he have that gear in him to be like, all right,
does he have that dog in him?
Yeah, no, he definitely doesn't. But like, does he have that gear in him where he understands, okay, I have to score 30 a game for us to win this series, and not just understand it, but execute it. He hasn't shown that since his injury. I mean, I don't think he's ever been like the most dynamic scorer, but especially over the last few months, it's not really been his forte, even in this series against Milwaukee. And let's be real. Milwaukee's perimeter defenders, you know, Lillard and fucking
Grayson Allen.
Grayson Allen's in Phoenix now. Malik Beasley and these guys, like, whatever the flaws and of Josh Hart at times and Dante DiVincenzo and whatever, like, they're way better as perimeter defenders than whoever the Bucks had in that series. And even in that series, this is Haliburton's numbers. He averaged 16 points. He shot 43.5% from the field, 29.6 from three. 16-9, like, he averaged 16 points and 9.3 assists. Like, let me tell you something. If he averages 16-9 against the Knicks, they're winning this series. And it's not going to be like very challenging. He's going to have to be way better. And I don't know. I just feel like the Knicks would be pretty locked in on him. So does he have the game to still cook in those scenarios and elevate his team, carry his team? I don't think so.
Yeah. I think in terms of a half court scorer, he's added to his game. I think, you know, out of college, no one thought he would have a pull up game. He's really shown that, obviously. But in the half court, it definitely looks like that scoring that, you know, against this defense especially is going to be challenging. Even though I didn't think the defense was consistently as good in that Philly series, and they're going to tighten up some things. You figure, I mean, there hasn't really been a series where any team has been able to have the Knicks have had, going back to even Atlanta, right? But especially last year and this year, you know, the Cleveland really struggled on offense. I think Miami got hot from three, but those were mostly low scoring games.
For what it's worth, Haliburton, he's actually averaging less drives per game than Andrew Nembhard is right now in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, again, if that happens,
9.7, which is, I mean, just for a comparison, Jalen Brunson is averaging 27 drives per game. So,
but yeah, so three times
and Maxey averaged 14.5. So just like, he's not threatening you in the same ways that Maxey was off the bounce.
And if they can't get the Knicks in rotation, they're living with a lot of contested jump shots. So which bodes obviously really well. You know, given some of the depth concerns that the Knicks have, you know, we mentioned Precious, you mentioned that you'd like to see him get some minutes, even if it's at the four. Do you think we see Alec Burks? You know, for me, I think I'm a little bit, I mean, I would prefer not to have to go through Burks minutes. The reasons why I think it might be a little bit more tenable is, one, Deuce has improved as a ball handler. So, you know, he's playing with more confidence. So, one, you know, if you do have to play Burks with the bench, maybe he's not going to hijack the offense necessarily the same way. And two, with Brunson playing so many minutes and Deuce really proving himself as an off-ball shooter, you can also have the option of having Burks be primarily just a replacement for Dante or Hart. Obviously, you lose something on defense, a lot on defense. But if he's in that off-ball role, at least on offense, you know, he's still – teams don't want to leave him open. And also, you're not having him as a playmaker, right? The ball's going to be in Brunson's hands. Do you think we see Burks in the series? And, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I hope not. I saw enough of Alec Burks this season. Say that. I saw enough of him. I don't know what the fuck happened to him when he came back to New York, but he played like an asshole. And
he was often asked to carry those bench units, right? And you didn't have OG, so his defense is shortcoming.
You can't pass because you're asked to do, like, come on. What are we doing?
Oh, he's never been much of a passer, right? So
yeah, and that's a problem when you're not making fucking shots either. So he wasn't making shots. He wasn't passing, and he was terrible on defense. Like, why do I want to see this guy?
I guess seven-man rotation is tough, eight-man rotation is tough, and Precious is not really reducing the Hart minutes. Other thing I mentioned, though, is, like, is Burks going to be allowed, or will he be able to play like an asshole, in your words, if he's playing with Brunson? I think that that's, you know, if he's just playing a few minutes with the starters and Brunson is controlling the ball, like, Burks is a spot-up guy, I think.
We can just dial up Deuce's minutes. Deuce and Dante can play more minutes, and that can give Hart some more rest. Burks should not be playing. If Burks is playing, something has gone very wrong. That probably means somebody got hurt. Like, I don't think he's going to play. I don't fucking want him to play. And I will be very, very glad when he's not fucking playing, because he played again like a raging fucking asshole when he came back to New York, and it was miserable to watch. It sucks that Bogdanović got hurt. Obviously, I think you saw in that game six against Philly how you missed him because you just had no pop off the bench. Just because, I mean, Deuce obviously had a great series. He had a bad game six. If he's not scoring, then you really have no scoring off the bench at all, right? Because Mitch is not exactly going to come in and, like, light it up. So, Burks, look, man, if he plays, so be it. I guess I'll trust Tibbs to some extent, but I don't want to see him. I don't want to see him, and I don't think he needs to play. I think you can give more minutes to other guys. And I'll say this, you know, our friend, her pal, Jeff at FrankBarrett119 on Twitter, he mentioned that he thought, you know, I don't necessarily agree with how extreme he was about this, but he did say that he thought, you know, the best lineup the Knicks had in that Philly series would be Brunson, Dante, Deuce, OG, and I think Hartenstein. Pick a five. Just because the floor is so much more spaced for Brunson, because we know that, and we saw Philly dare Josh Hart to beat them. Guess what? Josh Hart did beat them. I can understand the concerns about playing that lineup against Philly, given their general size. You don't really need to be worried about that in this series. Like, the Knicks can 100% go to that lineup and feel pretty confident about how they match up physically with Indiana. So I don't really know that you need Burks. I think you just need to tap into those lineups, or that specific lineup, way more, more than you did against Philly, and that should be enough to buy Josh Hart, you know, 6-7 minutes of rest every night.
Yeah, I still think, you know, you're asking a lot of OG and Hart right now, so you can definitely play Deuce more, but Hart is still gonna have to man those backup 4 minutes unless you play Precious, and maybe that's a better option.
I think Precious over Burks. Like, I'm sorry, like, Precious actually did shit for us this year that mattered. He was actually good at various points for the Knicks. He's also, like, you know, we talked about defending the pick and pop. Like, he's a guy you feel okay, like, pretty solid about. Hey, if we want to switch more, we can switch with Precious. Tibbs has talked about that multiple times, right? Like, he's talked about that in talking with reporters about how he likes that Precious can switch and that they are able to do that more when Precious is on the floor. Like, he just gives you actual versatility and usefulness, utility that Burks doesn't. Like, Burks is literally just going to go out there and do what Alec Burks does. And if he was shooting 40% from three on the Knicks, I would understand that. But he's not. He was terrible. What did he shoot? 30 fucking percent? And, I'm not betting on the fucking guy hasn't played. When's the last time Alec Burks played minutes? You even know? I have no idea. I don't know the last time he fucking played. And
did he play in one of those late Bulls or Nets games or anything?
No, definitely not. Thank God. But like, that's kind of the point. Like, Precious has already played in these playoffs. He played really fucking well too, right? He played great down the stretch of game 4 against Philly. So to me, he deserves more of a look than Burks. And even if that means using him at the 4 a little bit, which we know is not ideal, we saw that obviously for extended period. This is a matchup where I think you can almost get away with it for a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to see him played with Mitch at the same time. I think that would be, I would rather see him with Hartenstein.
Yeah.
Because that would really be a spacing issue.
We've seen that already. We've seen that him and Mitch together is really brutal.
Yeah. And on the other side, also, like, the nightmare is like Hart, Mitch, and Precious together. I think the spacing is probably more tenable if you play that 3-guard lineup. So Deuce, Dante, Brunson. It could be Burks. It could be Shake Milton. I do think at some point somebody's going to be gassed. I think that, look, we didn't like what we saw from Alec Burks. We saw Bogdanović turn it around. It can, the change of scenery, change going from, you know, Detroit to New York, you know, going from the worst team in the league or one of the worst teams in the league to a contender is a big adjustment. And in your role coming off the bench and doing that. So, you know, we have, you know, Tibbs obviously trusted Burks at one point. I don't know if he'd be willing to throw him in the playoff series. I don't think he had a good series against Atlanta. Did he even play in that Atlanta series or
Burks?
Yeah. I think he was healthy.
Yeah, he was really good in game 1. He was awesome in game 1.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Tibbs in there. Tibbs put him in there. And I was a little discouraged that Tibbs didn't play Precious at all in that Philly series. Do you think there's anything about this series that anything specific in the, obviously beyond the fact that the Sixers are a better team, anything specific about the series that makes Precious a little more tenable?
Completely honestly, I don't respect Indiana as much as I respect Philly. So I think you can just get away with it. Like, I just think you can get away with it for a little bit more than you could against Philly. That's not to say Indiana's bad or that there's no risk that they could punish those, you know, if you do play Precious the 4, that they could take advantage of that and punish those minutes. But like, they're not as good as Philly. So I think you have a much better chance at that just being tenable. And using those minutes just to give these guys a little bit more of a break. Because Josh Hart is, I have no idea how he did what he did in the first round. I don't really know how he's done what he's done for the Knicks this entire season with the minutes he's played and all that stuff. But like, I just think there's a limit to how much you can ask of him. And, you know, if you need to buy him some minutes, which I do think they need to buy him some minutes off the bench, you know, again, there's just better options to me than Burks. And if that means it doesn't need to be Precious. It could be, like we talked about, just playing Deuce more, playing Dante more.
Shake Milton?
I would dust off Shake Milton before I dusted off Alec Burks, tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a much better defender. And if Deuce is shooting like that, we've seen Shake run an offense capably. Not in the playoffs, I don't think. No, he has playoff experience with Philly, so I don't know. You know, he obviously wasn't able to break through in the rotation, didn't play against his old team, which is actually in some ways a little surprising. But if the Deuce is so effective off ball, the spacing concerns with Shake not being a great shooter are reduced in those bench minutes, right? So I could see him getting some minutes there, particularly if Brunson is just gassed. And you do, even if Brunson, you know, can play those 44 minutes. We've seen him at times at the end of game 5, for example, not always make the best decisions, right? So, and fatigue absolutely plays a role in that.
Jordan Bubb just posted this. Burks has shoulder issues reported on by our good pal, Stefan Bondi, who's definitely not a Nepo baby. But yeah, I mean, look, Burks, there probably is something to that shoulder stuff, and that probably is impacting how poorly he was shooting in New York. But like, if he has those issues, then why the fuck would I play him? If he, like, his entire value is predicated on his ability to hit shots. If he can't even fucking hit shots right now, then I don't want to have him on the floor, because that's the only thing he can do. That's the only skill he really has anymore. Precious just offers way more, and I'd rather roll with that, even if it's not ideal spacing or the lineups aren't perfect. Like, you know, I just would rather bet on the guy who actually has tools. And I think defensively, he's somebody who has value in the series, for, you know, in a very real way. And we saw that the one game the Knicks did win against Indiana, Precious was really good in that game. And he had a huge tip in at the end of the game, right, to put the Knicks up 5 with about a minute left. So like, he has experience against this team as well. And again, and you know, I mentioned OG earlier, but like, Precious has played against Siakam. He's practiced against that guy for years. So I think you want him to maybe get some minutes just because of the familiarity, right? He's played against that guy. And Pascal, quite honestly, pretty clearly, has been the Pacers. He was the best Pacer in the first round series against Milwaukee. And he's probably been the best. Yeah, and he's been probably the best guy in the Pacers for the last few months. He's been better than Haliburton to close the season. So the value Precious has, you know, it's just way more significant than, hey, let's hope Alec Burks can – his shot is back. Like, fuck that. I mean, we saw how bad it was when he played, and I don't really see any reason to believe that it will have improved magically since then.
Yeah, makes sense. Shifting gears a little bit. So this is a topic that I've seen some people discuss. So obviously, I think we grew up watching the Knicks around the same time, those 90s teams. Obviously, you know, there's some bad blood between them and a few teams. You know, MJ was a nemesis. You had the Heat, which, and you had the Pacers. Where do the Pacers rank in terms of, you know, how much, just given the history, the hate there, you know? Like, are they your most hated teams? Is it Miami? I think it's usually one of Miami or Pacers, particularly people in our like age group, but definitely curious.
Are they my most hated team?
Yeah.
No, Miami is. But I mean, they're definitely up there, man. We got Reggie Miller. Apparently Reggie Miller is gonna be on the call for game two, which I don't really, I'm sure that'll be
super... not available on MSG anymore, right?
No, it's not. Might be time to tap into the radio call. I don't know. I don't like. I mean, Tyrese Haliburton has been very, very fucking annoying to me throughout this season. Throughout the last couple of seasons, I find him to be insufferable.
Did you know the Knicks passed on him in the draft?
Yeah, man. What a horrible decision. If only we had a good point guard. But like, yeah, they're not my most hated team. That will probably always be Miami. But like, I definitely do not like them. And dude, this Haliburton quote from yesterday, like, we need to beat them so badly. I want to read this. I don't know if, I'm sure most people saw this already, but this is what he said. I keep telling guys I'm watching Quentin Nelson film. Knicks play balls to the wall at all times. Tyrese Haliburton, and then he wore a Quentin Nelson jersey, on the plane ride to New York. What exactly does watching an all-pro guard do for you in a series against the Knicks? How does that help? I would love to hear him expand on his logic there.
Maybe he thought he was a point guard, not an offensive
player. Are you like crunching Jason Kelsey tape?
Well, I always am. for sure. You know, didn't they say that Kobe used to watch like shark videos and stuff to like figure out how they attack?
Haliburton ain't Kobe, man.
He's got the guard mentality. No, I mean, I think the Knicks, that physicality is probably what he was alluding to, right?
I know what he's alluding to. I'm very specifically saying it is fucking stupid. what he said. But like, yeah, I mean, as like, historic rivalries, obviously Indiana's a historic rival. Reggie Miller is maybe the most like all-time Knicks villain in a lot of ways. Although I find it hilarious that his most famous moment is in a series that the Knicks ultimately ended up winning anyways. But like, yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely excited. Like, I was excited last year when we played Miami because it felt like, all right, like let's rekindle the rivalry here. And this does have like a similar feel to it, right? Where you're like, all right, let's rekindle a rivalry. This is a team that historically the Knicks have had a rivalry with. And also, like, I know, look, there's literally nobody on these teams remaining from the last time they played in the playoffs, but they ended.
They're also 2-seed that year, right? By the way,
so yeah, the Knicks were the 2-seed.
Last time they won 50 games and were the 2-seed. So
right, and you want, like, yeah, I still think there's like a revenge factor, at least for fans. Obviously, you know, for the players and coaches and all that stuff, it's not the same thing. But as a fan, like, yeah, I remember that series. I remember watching those games and wanting to fucking like just do the meanest things possible to Tyson Chandler for getting sunned to death by Roy Hibbert. But like, I remember all of that. Obviously, they ended the next season that year in game six in Indiana. But like, we know the Roy Hibbert block on Melo. But like, yeah, fuck Indiana. I would love for the Knicks to beat them. And yeah, they're a historic rival. So of course that we, of course, you know, you want to handle your business. And also, like, I think the Knicks have played the Pacers 7 times in the playoffs. The Pacers have won 4 times. So evening that up on a historic level would also be nice.
By the way, the one thing I'm definitely not looking forward to is seeing this fucking thing 8,000 times in the series. Can we all, for the record, anyone who's watching that doesn't know this, the Pacers lost that series because the same exact situation as that Maxi play, which will go down as a footnote, and that's all it is, just like the Reggie Miller choke thing.
The ironic thing about the ironic thing about the Reggie Miller choke thing is that the Pacers then choked, like they lost game 6 at home and then they lost game 7 in New York. And you know, it's just it's a funny moment. But yeah, look, yeah, yeah, you want to beat them. And also, like, look, the Knicks haven't made the conference finals since 2000. You have a chance to do it. We had a chance to do it last year. I think we all came away from that series very frustrated that they did not capitalize on their opportunity. You have another opportunity this year. And, like, look, I will say, with just the general kind of, like, how thin the Knicks are right now with all the injuries that they've dealt with, and, you know, I know Mitch is playing. You can see Mitch is playing through an injury. Like, he's clearly not 100%. Thank you. A shout out to Joel Embiid for his help in ensuring that Mitchell Robinson is not at 100%.
He was really just trying to avoid getting hurt.
So. Yeah, dude, I was having a flashback, a very normal thing to do. But, like, I can understand. They're so thin. It's very hard for me to be like, well, if they lost the series, it'd be a failure. I wouldn't view the season as a failure. I would view them losing the series as a failure. But you don't want to be in the position where Joel Embiid is, right? Where it's like every year, all we talk about is like, will this guy ever get out of the fucking second round? Like, you know, it's not, look, the Knicks made the playoffs last year and they've done it again. And they've won a consecutive series, opening round series now 2 years in a row for the first time since 2000. But you lose against Indiana, right? I guarantee you there's going to start being those conversations like, well, you know, can they really get over the hump? Is Jalen Brunson really that good if he can't get them to a conference finals? And like, you don't want to have that noise around your team. And like, you also want to feel like there's demonstrable progress. And while I think that there has been, regardless of the outcome of this series, it'd be very nice at a very basic surface level analysis to be like, well, you know, we went to the second round last year, we went to the fucking conference finals this year. That's clear progress. So there's a lot at stake. And yeah, fuck Indiana. Like, of course I want to beat them because Reggie Miller can go fuck himself.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely agree. Heat are number one for me. And then 2 is the Pacers. I think psychologically it has to mean something that besides year two, right, they have improved every year, right? So they got the four seed first year, get to the lose in the first round. Second year they win a playoff series, right? Lose the second round. The logical next step would be an Eastern Conference Finals, where I really at that point with the depth, the Bogdanovich really seems to hurt there. Obviously Porzingis is hurt too, but without looking too far ahead, you know, I think the psychological aspect of just getting a little closer every year matters, because when you keep hitting the same wall, that can, you know, you're worried a little bit at that point about the player's mentality. We probably have another summer of all of those conversations around, is Brunson a 1A, which I know we all love having those discussions. I did want to also ask this, because I've seen a lot of people talking about this. We didn't talk, I don't think we've potted since the end of the last, yeah, this is our first since the end of the Philly series. Obviously wanted to focus today on the Pacers and looking ahead, but given what Brunson did, you know, I mean, averaging 35 and 10 for a series, right? I think the only two players who did that were LeBron and MJ. The names that he's on a list with is, you know, they mentioned Oscar Robertson to him in the post game, obviously averaged 40 and 10 on the road. You know, in terms of just series performances, where does that rank up there for you for the Knicks and maybe even overall? And two, you know, I've seen a lot of people asking, is he the best Knicks since Ewing? Is he the best Knicks since Clyde? You know, Charles Oakley said he's the best Knicks since Clyde, but it seems like Oakley also likes to throw a lot of shade at Ewing. And you watched obviously Ewing and Brunson. I think you probably watched even more of Ewing than I have. So two, like, where does this playoff series rank for you in terms of Knicks history? And two, do you think is he the best Knicks since Clyde? Is he a top five Knick all time already, even without the what's to come?
You're specifically talking about the series against Philly, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that series was, I mean, it was as good as, I mean, it's as good as any opening round series you're ever going to see, forget Knicks or not. It's up there as one of the great opening round series of the playoffs, first round series of the playoffs. As far as where it ranks.
I meant specifically Brunson's performance. But
yeah, I mean, his performance was incredible. Is he Ewing? Is he on that level? I mean, no, he's not at that level yet. But you know how you get to that level is you beat Indiana and you get to the conference finals. And, like, you keep making an impact. You keep making runs in the playoffs. And that's how you elevate your standing to that level. You can't do it in one. I mean, yeah, you could do it in one playoffs. There's one way to do that. It's called winning a championship, but it's not that straightforward, obviously. So, it's something that they need to he needs to keep working towards, but I mean, I think he can get to that level. Yeah. I mean, he's clearly shown it and, you know, why couldn't he sustain this? Why can't he continue to be a monster? But yeah, I mean, his performance against Philly is, I mean, it's as good as anything in terms of just individual series performance. It's as good as anything I think Ewing did. And I just mean in terms of, like, the performance in one single playoff series. Ewing had some monster series too, obviously, but Brunson's stacks up with any of those. I mean, it's phenomenal, right? 35, 9, and just the sheer workload and everything, just spectacular stuff.
Yeah. I agree. He hasn't gone as far as Ewing did. I think there's still people who would put Melo over him, and that to me doesn't make sense at this point. I understand the roster construction wasn't great around Melo, but the roster construction right now in this moment, in this series, was not that, as was also Brunson was asked to do what Melo was asked to do. And he's been asked to do it 2 years in a row, really, because last year they were depleted as well. And not only has he done everything you can ask, he's elevated the team more than Melo did. And, you know, I didn't analyze the game as closely, obviously, when I was a kid watching Ewing. And so I think it's totally fair to have Ewing over him, but if you're doing a top five, you know, it's obviously Willis and Clyde are up there. Ewing is up there. And then you're talking, I mean, I think the old heads will say Richie Guerin. I can't put that in context. If you want to put Richie Guerin in, fine. But then you're talking about Bernard King, Brunson, Mello, and I think Brunson's the best of that group. And you know, and we've talked a lot about him, just how, but he's a guy who gives you a chance, it feels like, in every series. And I know, like, I mean, I think it was Jay Williams after that game six was like, is Brunson a superstar? No, we haven't seen him do it 2 years in a row. He mentioned Isaiah Thomas, which was interesting because Isaiah Thomas for a year or two did take on that kind of load. I think he's averaging 29 points a game. I just think Brunson's game has a much better chance of aging very gracefully. He is the kind of shot maker, the kind of craft, you know, he doesn't necessarily rely as much on speed. He's pretty quick in a short area, but those are things that you'd expect to age well. And so I think it's great to see. I definitely want to avoid trade talk, but I would imagine they're not done even adding around him. We've heard some names that have been thrown around. I know that's just sensitive and you don't want to talk. I mean, we love all these guys really that are on the team. So you don't even Bogdanovich, I would, you know, we saw what he was willing to put in to help this team and hit some big shots. But I mean, you're at the goal. You have a superstar right now. You have a guy that is going to, I think, at the end of the day, be up there with anyone in Knicks history. Yeah, I think he's a top five Knick all time, and I think he's definitely the best since Patrick Ewing, and you know, one of the top point guards I've seen play. Period.
Yeah, I mean, he's 100% the best Knick since Ewing. I don't even think that's much of a debate anymore. And you know,
noted Mello stan.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just his incredible legacy in New York. How could I ever forget it? Fucking loser. But like, you know, Brunson is just, what he's doing is incredible. And you've got to remember, like, all of the ways that this team has had to adjust and adapt and evolve over the course of the season makes it even more incredible, right? Like, you start the season off, your team is what it is. And then all of a sudden you trade for OG Anunoby. So you lose two guys, a starter, long-term. I mean, I'm not going to debate, you know, how good or whatever these guys were, but like RJ was a long-term starter in New York, quickly was a key reserve, probably should have won Sixth Man of the Year last year.
And both of those guys soaked up usage, by the way. Right.
Right.
You can debate how much they should have been soaking up from Brunson, but you lose two creators for a non-creator, really, in OG.
Right. And so, you know, it's whatever. The point is, like,
so, and then you lose Randall. I mean, it seems like we've had several different seasons in one, right? Like, you lose Randall, you trade for Bogdanovich, right? Then Bogdanovich gets hurt,
right?
Burks is not what you expect.
Randall goes out, right? He separates his shoulder at the end of January. There's so much. Mitch was out. Like, we people, like, I feel like we all have kind of gloss over that part of it. But Mitch literally was out from what, December 12th or something until the very end of the season. And at one point we thought he might not even be back. Like, he was, you know, the Knicks filed for, you know, they filed for
exception.
Yeah, injury exception, and they were surprised he came back. So that's incredible to me. And like, it just, and even in the playoffs now, right? Mitch missed a game. He missed game four. And then Bogdanovich gets injured in, was it game five? I don't know, game four, I think, right? He plays like 20 seconds. He goes out for the series at that point. He's out, he's done for the year. So even through this playoff run, like, you're getting constant curveballs thrown at you. And obviously, look, we're Knicks fans, so we're focused on the Knicks. And I'm sure that other teams have their own sob stories. But I do think the Knicks have really had to battle through a lot of adversity. And Brunson in particular has just constantly had to, like, okay, you got to do a little bit more. You got to do a little bit more. You got to do a little bit more. And the load he's carrying is incredible. And what he's done is incredible. So, you know, he has a chance to lead the Knicks to a conference finals now. I think the Knicks did not, you know, they did not duck the smoke. They took on the challenge of playing Philly. They have home court, obviously, in the series. This has a chance to be a very memorable season for all the right reasons versus many of the wrong reasons that that we've become accustomed to over the years with the Knicks. But I mean, he's been special. So
I don't think there's any debate there. And I agree with what you said before. I think after the series, if they do lose, it'll be very disappointing, like last year. But I think you saw just how, I mean, even you'd still say there's progress, right? You found out Brunson is even better than we thought last year. I think that little bit more thing, it's just since he got here, he's continuously got better. Who will be Robin to Brunson's Robin? I hope that's a typo and not a suggestion that Brunson is Robin from Villain X. If you had to pick a guy besides Brunson in the series who's going to step up and have a big series, who are you looking at and who do you think it's going to be?
Dante. He set his career high. It's no longer his career high, but he set his career high the night that we did trade for OG, where RJ and quickly obviously went out. He scored like 38 points, whatever the hell it was. It's a good matchup for him. I don't think Indiana, I mean, they're not a good defensive team. He's going to have open looks. He's going to have opportunities. And hopefully that last game that he played against Philly, hopefully that was a kind of launching point for him to get back to the guy he was in the regular season, because we need him. I don't think it's sustainable to just keep being like, hey, Jalen Brunson, please save us constantly. Maybe it is. Maybe I am underrating Brunson by saying that, but like, you need somebody else to step up. I think he's the guy to step up. I will also say we haven't mentioned him really, not at all. This is an Isaiah Hartenstein series for me. Like, I think he's much better equipped to handle that pick and pop action than Mitchell Robinson is. He should dominate the glass against Miles Turner. I think his passing, look, we saw Joel Embiid gave him problems. Miles Turner does not offer that physicality at all in the same way that Embiid did. Hartenstein should be very comfortable in this matchup. And we obviously saw the offensive benefits of Hartenstein when he got put into that starting lineup and kind of how the Knicks offense evolved, especially once Randall went out. This is a team in Indiana where he can really thrive as a facilitator and offensive hub. So let's see him do it, because he clearly has the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. This is a better series. Embiid was able to be physical, obviously, you know, drew a lot of fouls. I think Hartenstein's very important, especially when Brunson goes to the bench. That is the guy I would actually stagger him with, more so than like Harder, Dante, or some of the other guys. One, he has really good chemistry with Deuce, going back to when they were coming off the bench together. Deuce is a good cutter. Hartenstein's really good at finding him with that pocket pass when Deuce cuts. I like the way the offense, that it gives you a different look, when, especially when the Knicks don't have a ball handler like Brunson out there, the ability to kind of fly around and his ability to dictate. And he can even, I mean, he hit a pull-up jump, or he hit a mid-range jumper, not even that, or he hit that. But that floater is really dangerous. You can't really just give him that once he gets below the free throw line. That really, I mean, as much as he didn't have his best series, it seemed like he missed maybe one of those all series. He was just automatic, and that really took a lot of pressure off Brunson. And I think that with Brunson having to deal with Turner at the rim, Hartenstein providing that outlet in a way that Mitch doesn't is really important. I'm going to say Deuce McBride, though. I think he is one of the big X factors for the Knicks. I thought he was awesome against Philly.
Oh, he was fantastic. And for him to be doing that in the playoffs, like playing his best ball in the playoffs, says a ton about him.
Especially given how young he is. We've seen younger players struggle. Even Brunson struggled in his first playoffs. So I think that, you know, you mentioned the problems McConnell has given him, but the Knicks are going to need guys to hit shots to keep up with this Indiana team. And they're also going to need perimeter defenders to deal with the shooters and the creators that Indiana has. I think this is a very big series for Deuce, and I think he's going to respond in kind.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
So I know he's also, I don't know the geography of Indiana too well, but I know that Deuce is from Cincinnati. So this will be, it's closer to Indiana, a lot closer. I think Indianapolis is south, so might have some family and friends at that game, or more than you normally would, or the series. Yeah.
Well, You know what the Midwest is. So,
Mike Deuce.
We can probably end with this right here. This is a question from Nixtape. I may have missed the discussion, but what does the bench look like, and what will it look like if/when we get Jalen, Dante, and Josh rest?
So I guess what you're saying is who are the bench?
And then he said this: I'm expecting some Deuce, Dante, OG, Precious, iHeart lineups to get two of the Nova 3 rest.
Yeah, I think that's a lineup you definitely go to. We've seen how effective OG and I don't know what their net ratings were, but we know OG and Precious were really effective with Randall. iHeart obviously is a different player than Randall, but you know he can operate in similar ways below the post. So we've seen, and of course your ability to switch so much, and you know you can switch a lot in that group. Deuce, Dante, OG, Precious, iHeart. I think you'll see some of that also when Precious plays the four. I think you might even see Brunson, Deuce, Dante next to them, which I think is a lineup that Tibbs has become more comfortable with. And the Pacers have been known to go small themselves, right? They don't really have, it's not a series, they don't have even a Tobias Harris or even a Kelly Oubre, really, who's a big physical wing that's going to punish that, right? Siakam doesn't really play the three for them. So I think that you might see that. I think you'll see some of those three guard lineups, Deuce, Brunson. But you know, we're talking bench. I assume this is what Luka means is kind of the non Brunson minutes. I think that's Deuce, Dante, OG, Precious, iHeart. I think you're gonna get a lot of play. You'll see Hart in place of Precious in that lineup, and you'll see. I just don't think you'll see Precious and Mitch. I agree with that. I'll throw this one at you. We know he likes to have his two big rim protectors. Do you think we see OG at the five at all?
No.
OG, Hart, Brunson, no. Deuce, Dante.
No.
He played it at times
Did he? He played it when we were trying to fucking switch everything and foul at the end of game six.
No, he played it. He played it in game four and game five, I believe.
He didn't play. I mean, he played. Oh, he used OG on
MVP. He played it in game five. I was there, but for like a minute, he played it in game five.
Yeah, yeah. But he did that because he did that when Philly went five out in the non-Embiid minutes. But like, if Indiana has somebody who he considers a center on the floor, he will not play that lineup. I guarantee that. I am 1 billion. I would wager my life's fucking savings that as long as they have somebody who he considers a center on the floor, that lineup will never occur.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd like to see it at some point, though. I like the look OG gives.
I would like to see a lot of things. So, all right. Thanks to everybody that joined us here in the chat. Appreciate all of your support, obviously, not just today, but throughout the year and throughout all the time we've done this. I'll Stacey, anything that you want to plug before we get out of here?
I'll plug all the great work at the Strickland.
And make a prediction too when you get
there. Yeah, so I will first plug all the great work at the Strickland. We did a roundtable that dropped, I believe today, on the thoughts from various writers. I'll plug my old co-host, Matt Miranda, did a really good pod with Caitlin Cooper from the Pacers, who, if you want a good Pacers review, there's no one better than her. She's one of the best basketball follows, period. So Matt did a pod with her on Jacobin Sports. I have a pod I did with Omar Zahran, formerly of Let's Talk Knicks, talking really going in depth on Jalen Brunson. So I'll plug those things. My prediction is Knicks in six. I think it could go shorter than that, but I do think I think Indiana will get a game or two just from getting really hot from three, the Knicks being sloppy in transition. But I think over the course of six series, the physicality in Jalen Brunson is just going to be too much. So I go Knicks in six.
Yeah, I got Knicks in six. I think the Knicks are a better team. I do think that they'll split these opening two games just as they kind of get a second wind. After again, what was a super just insane first round series against Philly. And then I think they get stronger as the series goes on. It's what I wrote in our Strickland roundtable, which you can read on the website. So check that out too if you want to see our predictions and prognostications for the series. I have nothing to plug, so I'll just plug. I'll echo your sentiments, plugging all the work at the Strickland. Definitely check that out. And yeah, if you do want a rational Pacers fan view of things and analysis, definitely check out Caitlin Cooper. She's obviously excellent at what she does. And yeah. All right. That is our show for today. Again, thanks for everybody that was here in the chat. We appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsor, Bet Online. Knicks play again tonight at 7:30. I think I'll be on for the post game. So I'll see anybody that is going to be there. I'll see you then. That is our show for today. I hope everybody has a great rest of your day, especially the Knicks. I will see you later tonight.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.